Picture this. It's 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday.
The absolute middle of the night.
Right. And you are somewhere in the dark, you know, this quiet expanse of Western Pennsylvania, inside this highly secure, custom-built room. 11 of the absolute best amateur radio operators on the planet are locked in.
Just completely isolated.
Exactly. They're staring at these glowing dials, totally immersed in a relentless 48-hour global contest. And outside their window, 14 massive steel towers rise up over a 16-acre compound.
Wow.
Yeah, pulling in invisible signals from literally every corner of the Earth. The tension is incredibly high. The engineering is world-class.
Naturally.
But right in the middle of this intense high-tech operation is a backyard cook from South Jersey making absolutely sure there is enough pork roll to go around.
I mean, it is a brilliant, just completely contrasting image, right?
It really is.
You have the absolute pinnacle of technological precision and focus. And it is essentially being fueled by cold cuts and sheer human willpower.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at this really fascinating article written by Terry Rossi. His amateur radio call sign is N2LQH.
Right.
And he wrote this piece detailing his completely wild, highly improbable journey to a place called K3LR.
Which is a legendary spot.
Oh, absolutely. For those outside the hobby, K3LR is widely considered the world's greatest amateur radio contest station. And Terry was there, right in the trenches, during the 2026 ARL Worldwide DXSSB contest.
And our mission for you today is to explore exactly how those three distinct elements sort of combine.
Yeah.
You know, high stakes engineering, relentless dedication, and the power of human connection. Plus, obviously, some really good food.
Can't forget the food.
Exactly. Because this story, it isn't just a technical manual about radios. It is a really profound look at the intersection of analog technology and deep, enduring human tradition.
Okay, let's unpack this because Terry's journey to even get a foot inside this room is, well, it's almost as crazy as the room itself.
Yeah, it's quite the backstory.
Right. Because Terry wasn't some lifelong hardcore contest competitor. He actually got his first amateur radio license back in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And he had some incredible moments back then.
Like the space station contact.
Yes. He actually made contact with Russian cosmonaut Sergei Krikalev while Krikalev was orbiting the Earth on the Mir space station.
Which is wild.
It's amazing. But then, as it so often does, life gets in the way, you know? Terry steps away from the hobby. He builds an IT business, raises his kids, eventually sells the business.
The usual trajectory.
Exactly. And he doesn't actually return to amateur radio until 2025.
Which means he comes back to a completely transformed landscape. I mean, he left an analog world and returned to one driven by digital modes and really complex computer controls.
Right. It's night and day.
Yeah. But his professional background in IT translates perfectly to it. So he starts looking into what is called contesting.
Which is essentially the competitive sport of amateur radio, right?
Yeah, right. Where you try to contact as many stations in as many different locations as possible in a strict time limit.
Yeah.
And that curiosity leads him down a massive research rabbit hole.
The very deep rabbit hole. So he is sitting on his couch in South Jersey, and he ends up watching a 168-slide YouTube presentation.
That is a long presentation.
It is. It's given by a man named Tim Duffy. Tim's call sign is K3LR, and he is the CEO of a major company called DX Engineering.
Right, the mastermind.
Yeah, the mastermind who built this legendary contest compound in Pennsylvania. So Terry is watching this presentation, looking at the towers, the sleeping barns, the multi-million dollar equipment, and then he gets to slide 154 and he just completely freezes.
Because right there on the screen, credited as the man who essentially feeds and sustains this elite contest team, is a face Terry hasn't seen in over 4 decades.
Yep.
Kim Duffy introduces him to the YouTube audience as Chef Sal, WM2H. But Terry doesn't know him as Chef Sal. Terry knows him as Sal Anastasio.
It's his childhood friend's older brother.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the guy who used to drive Terry and his friends to Catholic high school every single morning before any of them even had a driver's license. Terry has this vivid memory of Sal driving a Chevy Chevelle, the car smelling like leaded gasoline, blasting Hot Tuna and Jefferson Airplane on an 8-track player.
It's such a specific memory.
It really is. Think about the odds of this. It is like you are watching a high-end documentary about a championship Formula One racing team, you know? You're analyzing the pit crew, and you suddenly realize the lead aerospace engineer is the teenager who used to drive your middle school carpool.
What's fascinating here is the incredibly small world nature of niche communities. I mean, you have millions of people participating in this hobby worldwide.
Right.
Yet these paths cross in such a highly specific, unpredictable way. And it's really worth looking at how Terry handles this realization.
Yeah, he didn't just let it go.
No, and a lot of people would just fire off a quick two-line email to the company saying, like, hey, I think I know Sal. But when Terry receives a routine customer satisfaction email from Tim Duffy, the CEO, Terry treats it as a real opportunity.
He writes a whole letter.
A very detailed, thoughtful letter. He recounts the whole story. The 168 slides, the Catholic high school carpool, the Chevy Chevelle, the hot tuna 8-track.
Everything.
Everything. It really demonstrates the profound power of actual storytelling over just conveying raw information.
And it completely worked. Tim Duffy loved the story so much that he forwarded it to the entire contest team, including Sal.
Wow.
Yeah. And Sal immediately replies to Tim and claims that Terry is a, quote, great chef.
Which is funny because...
Right, because Terry outright admits in his article that Sal knows exactly what his culinary skills are, and great chef is a massive stretch. Sal is basically just fabricating a resume to get his old buddy an invite to the compound to help him cook.
Which is a beautiful illustration of how personal loyalty and shared history often trump formal qualifications in these extremely tight-knit, high-pressure groups.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, Sal is staring down a grueling 48-hour contest where he is responsible for feeding 16 exhausted people.
Yeah.
Bringing in an old buddy who could be trusted to handle the pressure.
And someone who knows how to make a proper South Jersey pork roll.
Crucial skill. But yeah, that's a massive strategic asset. The endorsement wasn't strictly about culinary mastery. It was about trust. And it worked. Tim extends the formal invitation, and Terry is suddenly packing his bags.
So Terry makes the drive out to Western Pennsylvania. And honestly, nothing can prepare a normal person for the sheer scale of the K3LR compound. Let's just talk about this setup for a second.
It is staggering.
We are looking at 16 acres of land. 14 different towers. And just to give you a sense of scale, one of those towers is a 275-foot structure dedicated solely to the 40-meter band.
Right. And for anyone listening who isn't a radio engineer, when we say 40-meter band, we are talking about the physical length of the radio wave itself.
Exactly.
A 40-meter radio wave is literally 40 meters long from peak to peak. So to launch a wave that massive into the atmosphere, you need phenomenally large metal antennas.
Huge. Terry describes just standing in the yard, staring up at layers and layers of aluminum disappearing into the clouds.
The outside is wild, but the inside of the radio shack is a literal temple of engineering.
Yeah.
I mean, they are running 11 ICOM IC78851 transceivers.
And just to put that into perspective for you, each one of those radios retails for over $10,000.
Over 10 grand each.
Yeah. And Terry notes that Tim keeps two extra just sitting there in the box as spares because, quote, that's how Tim rolls. But hold on, I have to stop you here because I am looking at these numbers. 16 acres, a 275-foot tower, hundreds of thousands of dollars in radios and amplifiers. If I have infinite money, can't I just buy all this gear, hire a team, and automatically win the world championship?
It's a common question.
Right, like where is the actual human skill if you can just throw unlimited cash at the sky?
It is a very fair skepticism. I mean, when you hear those figures, it sounds like someone just buying a trophy. But here is the reality of elite contesting and why that assumption falls apart.
Okay, tell me.
Money can absolutely buy the aluminum. And money can buy the real estate. What money absolutely cannot buy is the relentless, obsessive discipline required to make those radios actually hear anything.
Oh, this is the noise thing.
Exactly. And that brings us to K3LR's legendary noise policy.
Yeah, I read about this war on RF noise. It sounds completely exhausting.
It really is. Tim wages an absolute zero-tolerance war on radio frequency interference across every single square inch of that 16-acre property. Let me explain why.
Please do.
Modern life is incredibly noisy. Every electronic device you own is essentially a miniature radio jammer. If you walk into the K3LR compound, you will not find a single wall wart.
Wait, wall warts? You mean those standard blocky power adapters you use to charge your laptop or plug in a wireless router?
Those exact ones.
Oh yeah, I probably have 20 of them plugged into various outlets in my house right now.
We all do. And every single one of them is banned to K3LR. They use switching power supplies, meaning they rapidly chop up electricity thousands of times a second to drop the voltage.
Which causes a problem for radios.
A huge problem. That chopping action creates microscopic sparks, which broadcast broadband static into the air.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So if you were trying to hear a faint whispering radio signal from a guy on an island in the Pacific Ocean, a phone charger plugged into the wall three rooms away will completely drown him out.
That is insane. So what did Tim do?
He ripped them all out. Everywhere you'd normally find a plug-in transformer, Tim has installed a centralized 12-volt power system, and every single wire is wrapped through a toroid coil.
Right, I saw that mentioned. What exactly is a toroid coil?
So a toroid coil, it basically looks like a heavy magnetic donut. You know, you wrap the power wire through the center of it a few times.
Okay, like a physical loop.
Exactly. And that magnetic field acts like a physical speed bump for high-frequency electrical noise.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the clean power gets through just fine. But the radio interference, it sort of crashes into the magnetic field and gets choked out before it can travel down the wire and ruin the reception.
That is so clever. And this rule applies everywhere.
Not just the radio room. It applies to the main house, the barns, the guest houses, everywhere.
The level of detail is just insane. Which brings me to the light bulbs.
Ah, yes.
I thought this was a joke at first when I read it. Every single light bulb on the entire property has to be an old school glass incandescent bulb. Absolutely no modern LED bulbs are allowed anywhere.
Because LED bulbs are not just simple glowing filaments. The base of an LED bulb contains a tiny, extremely cheap switching power supply to regulate the current.
So it's another jammer.
Exactly. When you turn on an LED light in your kitchen, you are turning on a tiny radio jammer.
And Tim takes this so seriously that he even refuses to use LEDs for the FAA-required aircraft warning beacons at the very top of that 275-foot tower. I mean, can you imagine the logistical nightmare of trying to track down specialized, high-intensity, incandescent aviation bulbs in the year 2026? Everything is LED now.
That is exactly the point. That is not just spending money. That is an absolute obsession with perfection.
I'll say.
If we think about this as a broader insight, you know, a real signal versus noise metaphor for modern life, we live in a world completely saturated with background interference. Creating a pocket of absolute, uncompromising electronic silence requires discipline that most people simply don't possess.
That's a great way to put it.
You cannot just purchase that kind of quiet.
Yeah.
You have to aggressively engineer it.
Yeah.
And then ruthlessly enforce it.
All right. You've convinced me. It's not just an open checkbook. It's a completely sterile, perfectly silenced machine. So you have the ultimate setup. Now, how does the actual 48-hour grind work?
It's intense.
The contest they are competing in is the ARRL Worldwide DX SSB contest. Let's break that alphabet soup down real quick.
Yeah.
ARRL is the American Radio Relay League, the governing body. DX stands for distance, meaning you only get points for contacting stations in other countries. And SSB stands for single sideband, which just means this is a voice contest. You are actually speaking into a microphone, not tapping out Morse code.
Exactly. And K3LR is competing in the multi-multi category. That means multiple transmitters and multiple operators.
Right.
They are allowed to transmit on several different frequency bands at the exact same time. Now, if you think about the physics of that, you know, pumping thousands of watts of radio energy out of one antenna while trying to listen for a faint signal on another antenna just 100 yards away.
It's a recipe for blowing up your own equipment.
Which is exactly why they have a custom-built interlock system.
Yeah, the hardware network. It physically prevents two operators on the same band from keying up their microphones at the exact same millisecond.
No.
If they did, one radio would instantly fry the receiver of the other.
It is a highly choreographed dance. Terry explains that on the main bands, you know, 10, 15, 20, 40, and 80 meters, they use two-person teams.
Okay, how does that split work?
So one operator's sole job is to sit on a single frequency, constantly calling out CQ, which just means calling any station listening, and logging everyone who answers to build up the raw number of contacts.
Meanwhile, the second operator sitting right next to him is the hunter.
Exactly.
They are rapidly scanning the rest of the band, desperately searching for multipliers. A multiplier is a contact with a new country or a rare geographic zone, and the raw contact score is multiplied by the number of unique zones they find.
And then there's the 160-meter band, which is a massive, slow-moving radio wave.
Yeah.
That station has a solo operator, because pulling signals out of the atmospheric static on that frequency requires immense punishing patience.
I can't even imagine. And these operators are world-renowned, right? They fly into Pennsylvania on their own dime just for the privilege of sitting in these chairs.
Yes.
And they absolutely crushed it. When the final buzzer sounded on Sunday evening, they had logged over 6,600 contacts, scoring over 11.8 million points. They took first place in the entire world for the multi-multi category.
An objectively staggering achievement. But there is a very important, incredibly humbling caveat to that global victory.
Yes, here's where it gets really interesting. Tim Duffy actually went into this weekend aiming for something even bigger. He wanted to break the all-time USA multi-multi-point record. The station performed flawlessly, the team made zero mistakes, the noise floor was virtually silent, but they missed the record. Why? Because the ionosphere just didn't cooperate.
Let's explain how the ionosphere dictates this entire game.
Yeah.
Because long-distance radio communication doesn't travel in a straight line, right? The Earth is curved.
Right.
Instead, operators bounce their radio waves off the ionosphere, which is a layer of charged particles high up in the atmosphere, energized by the sun. It is exactly like skipping a stone across a pond. You bounce your signal up, it hits that invisible ceiling, and it skips back down to Europe or Asia.
But if the solar weather is bad, the pond is choppy, the stone just sinks into space.
Precisely. I mean, you can spend millions of dollars. You can build a 275-foot tower. You can ban every single LED bulb and phone charger on a 16-acre property. But you are still entirely, completely at the mercy of the weather in the upper atmosphere.
It's
And
amazing.
that vulnerability is the true heart of amateur radio. No matter how much technology you apply, you are engaged in a forced partnership with the natural world.
Right.
The ionosphere answers to absolutely nobody.
It is the ultimate equalizer. What I found so telling was Tim's reaction to it. Even after securing first place globally, he immediately started pacing the room, brainstorming engineering tweaks for next year to beat that domestic record.
He never stops.
Never. But you know, if those perfectly silent radios and towering antennas are the engine of this massive 48-hour race car, the kitchen table is the heat sink.
I really like that analogy.
It fits, right? It's the one place where these operators, who are running on pure adrenaline and severe sleep deprivation, can actually vent the pressure, share stories, and just be human beings for 15 minutes at a time.
The transition from the cold, sterile perfection of the radio room to the warmth of the kitchen is absolutely where this story finds its soul.
Completely agree.
Because elite performance in any field, whether it's competitive radio, aerospace engineering, or professional sports, it is rarely sustained by the work itself. It is sustained by the culture built around the work.
And the culture at K3LR involves some incredibly serious food. Terry, along with his old buddy Sal, a German operator named Sandy, and a woman named Bonnie.
The house mom.
Yes, she's the wife of one of the operators, and Terry credits her as the indispensable house mom keeping the entire operation from derailing. They ran a phenomenal kitchen. We are not talking about throwing frozen pizzas in an oven here.
Far from it.
We are talking made-to-order breakfasts featuring authentic South Jersey pork roll for dinner, king
Ooh.
crab, shrimp scampi, pork Wellington,
Wow.
smoked filet mignon with Gruyere cream spinach. I mean, I don't eat this well on a major holiday, let alone in the middle of a marathon endurance event.
It serves a vital psychological function, though. During a 48-hour contest, the shack never stops transmitting.
Someone is always on.
Right. Operators have to tag out and grab food between these intense, high-focus shifts. But that kitchen table becomes a hub of shared history. Decades of contest stories are passed around while they eat.
And the level of detail they sweat over is hilarious. Before the contest even begins, the kitchen crew preps dozens of cold-cut sandwiches in Ziploc bags for the graveyard shifts.
And of course,
Because this is a house entirely populated by hardcore radio nerds, they label all the Italian hoagies using a black Sharpie. Wait for it. In Morse code.
which is exactly the kind of inside joke that binds a team together.
Totally. But the traditions go so much deeper than just jokes. Tim has built an incredible physical culture. Every single team member gets a custom K3LR coffee mug with their name and their radio call sign printed on it.
But the catch is you actually get two mugs.
Right.
You take one home with you, and the other one permanently stays on a specific shelf in the compound.
That's such a great touch.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that second mug sitting on the shelf is a brilliant, really subtle leadership choice. It's Tim's way of creating a permanent legacy for the team.
It's physical proof you belong.
Exactly. It is a quiet, highly visible way of saying to these world-class operators, you belong in this room, and we fully expect you back here next year. It built incredible psychological loyalty.
Just like the custom t-shirts. He commissions these shirts for the team to celebrate past milestones, like the year they managed a mind-boggling 406 contacts in just 60 minutes on the 10-meter band.
Right, he ensures their extreme effort is visible, documented, and remembered.
And you really feel the weight of that loyalty at the end of the contest. When the radios finally go quiet on Sunday evening and the sleep deprivation really sets in, Tim gathers everyone in the living room and gives a deeply heartfelt thank you.
But the absolute emotional peak of the weekend was a surprise for one of the operators, right?
Yes, Dr. Jose Vicens, known to the team as Otis, call sign NP4G. They brought out a cake and surprised him with the news that he had just been selected as the 2026 Dayton Hamvention Ham of the Year.
That's huge in that world.
Massive. And they coordinated it so they got to tell him a full day before the official public announcement.
I mean, to be celebrated by your absolute peers, by people who intimately understand the thousands of hours it takes to achieve that level of mastery in that specific historic room, it is a memory that will stay with him for a lifetime.
Without a doubt.
It speaks volumes about the character of the group. They are competitors, but they are fiercely protective of their own.
And then they physically seal that memory. Oh. A bottle of Maker's Mark bourbon is brought out and passed around the room. Every single member of the team takes a marker and signs their call sign directly on the label.
But they don't drink it.
Nope. That bottle doesn't get opened. It gets saved. It goes high up on a shelf in the DX barn, placed right next to a line of other signed bottles from past world-class finishes.
It's a permanent physical history of exactly who was there in the trenches.
Exactly. And right there, alongside all these absolute legends of the hobby, Terry takes the marker and signs his call sign, N2LQH.
A backyard cook from South Jersey, earning his permanent place on the bottle through sweat, a phenomenal pork Wellington, and sheer willingness to help.
So what does this all mean? We followed Terry from a random YouTube rabbit hole to a nostalgic memory of a Chevy Chevelle, all the way to witnessing a global world championship in Western Pennsylvania.
For you listening, there is a highly practical takeaway here, rooted deeply in Terry's core philosophy. Terry writes that if you ever want to prove your value in a new room, you need to, quote, give results in advance.
Show, do not just talk.
Exactly. Sal definitely stretched the truth to get Terry in the door, but Terry actually proved he belonged by putting his head down, working tirelessly in the kitchen, and delivering those results in advance. Yeah. It's a lesson that perfectly applies. Whether you are an IT professional trying to land a massive contract, a cook trying to feed an elite team of engineers, or simply navigating the politics of your own career, ultimately, you have to earn your signature on that bottle.
Give results in advance. It's incredibly powerful advice. But I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over today, focusing back on the technology itself. Think about the year 2026.
Okay.
You can pull a perfectly silent, high-definition piece of glass out of your pocket right now, and you can instantly video chat with almost anyone on Earth entirely for free with zero effort.
Right.
Yet these absolute legends choose to spend millions of dollars. They build 275-foot steel towers. They meticulously rip out every single LED light bulb and phone charger on a 16-acre property. They dedicate grueling, sleepless weekends of their lives. And all of this, just to hear a crackling, faint analog voice on the other side of the planet.
It's paradox.
It is. Why do they do it? Perhaps it's the very friction of the medium. Maybe the extreme uncompromising difficulty of making that connection is exactly what makes hearing another human voice so incredibly valuable. It brings us right back to 2 a.m. in that quiet Pennsylvania room, staring at the glowing dials, launching invisible waves into the ionosphere, and waiting for the world to answer back.
That is a perfect place to leave it. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
We'll see you next time.